Our next case this morning is number 06-2659, the United States against Darius Hollins. Mr. Plotkin.
May it please the court, my name is Gabe Plotkin, and I represent Darius Hollins. There was a very real dispute in this case about the scope of Darius Hollins' involvement in the charged conspiracy to smuggle cocaine. In the district court's conclusions that Mr. Hollins was responsible for more than 5 kilos of cocaine and that he deserved a 3-point enhancement for his leadership role are clearly erroneous. In addition, the district court committed constitutional error when it reached these conclusions based on evidence withheld from the jury and at trial and introduced for the first time at sentencing. There's two drug quantities at issue, two drug quantity findings. They relate to the Addison 2 trip and the Clemens trip, as they've been identified in the brief. The district court is required by law to state reasons in support of holding Mr. Hollins responsible for each particular amount of drugs. And the district court never addressed the foreseeability of the Addison 2 trip specifically, despite attributing nearly 3 kilos of cocaine to Mr. Hollins for that trip. It simply concluded generically that Mr. Hollins and Mr. Wilson were equally responsible for everything, and therefore we're going to attach this to Mr. Hollins. But that conclusion by the district court is clearly erroneous because it is contrary to the government's evidence. The government's evidence showed that Mr. Hollins was not responsible for all of the trips taken in furtherance of the conspiracy. The indictment charged him with only two of 3 trips connected to the conspiracy. And the government stated through its sentencing papers that this was because Mr. Hollins was not criminally responsible for that 3rd trip. That courier was only responsible to Mr. Wilson. So the question at sentencing is, if Mr. Hollins is not responsible for all of the trips, is he responsible for the Addison 2 trip? And the judge never addressed that question. And his generic conclusion to the contrary is inconsistent with the government's evidence. The only evidence before the judge that Mr. Hollins was responsible for this Addison 2 trip and these nearly 3 kilos of cocaine is Annette Addison herself. This is the woman who testified at Mr. Hollins' sentencing hearing. And she is wholly unreliable. And there's 5 reasons for that. The first is that she testified inconsistently across a number of proceedings. 3 times she was under oath, and all 3 times she gave different story about what happened. Second, she testified inconsistently within this own hearing. She testified that she was a recruiter, that she was not a recruiter, that Mr. Hollins was involved, that Mr. Hollins was not involved. She did this on direct, on cross, and on redirect. Third, she testified that she had memory problems due in part to some medication. She didn't remember the details of what happened. She didn't remember what she testified to last time. Fourth, she testified that her proffer statement was essentially coerced, that she was threatened with an extra 20 years in prison if she didn't cooperate, that they told her what to say, and her statement was, "I had no choice but to say this." Fifth, and I think most importantly, she is wholly unreliable because the government didn't even trust her. They had her proffer statement before they filed their 2nd superseding indictment in this case, the indictment that the trial was held over. And they didn't put her before the grand jury. They didn't add charges to the indictment, including her testimony. They didn't put her on at the trial to support the conspiracy charge. And they didn't ask a single witness whether they knew or had anything to do with Annette Addison. She is completely unreliable and cannot be used as a basis for finding Mr. Hollins responsible for those drugs.
Isn't that a judgment for the fact finder and in this case, the trial judge? And the judge did, as I understand the record, jump in and try to clarify some of these inconsistencies and pin her down. And it's clear she was a very difficult witness and there were inconsistencies, but the judge is entitled to sift and winnow those and accept the testimony, and we don't second guess that.
But
she's incredible as a matter of law, but that seems not to be the case here.
Well, given the volume of statements that this woman made from 1997 through 2006, the fact that he could pick out a few statements and tried to winnow her down in one particular case cannot stand for the proposition that that is the truth to the exclusion of everything else that she has said. And it's important, a few things. First, he never said, I find her credible as to this point that Mr. Hollins was involved in the Addison 2 trip. He never made that finding.
Well, isn't that implicit in the attribution of the cocaine amounts from that trip to your client?
It's not, because he made a finding that his finding was contrary to the evidence, as I set out before. He just said, well, he's responsible for everything, and this is part of it, so I'm going to hold him to it. But the evidence was he's only responsible for some of the trips. And the judge never addressed what evidence he was relying on to say he's responsible for this particular trip. And the Seventh Circuit law is also very clear that when a district court is going to credit someone who gives contradictory statements, the judge has to directly address those contradictions and explain into the record why he is crediting one version of evidence as opposed to the other versions of evidence presented. And the district court never did that in this case. And that's clear error in and of itself, that failure to find the facts to support his view, maybe it was his view, that, well, when I asked her the question, that was the truth.
Let me ask you this. At the first, after the sentence was originally imposed in this case, and there was an appeal, there was an Apprendi argument that was made. And as I understand, maybe you can tell me I'm wrong here, but I thought the argument was only that the judge, instead of the jury, made the finding that there was more than 5 kilos involved in this case. Was there, after the first sentencing, a challenge to the accuracy as opposed to the person who made the determination?
No. At the original sentencing, there wasn't testimony or a challenge to any specific findings.
The judge found there was 5 to 15, and then you appealed, and as part of the issue in appeal was that this procedure violated Apprendi, and we now know that argument, it was not a winning argument. So now it goes back to resentencing. Why does the judge have to, if he's already determined that it was 5 to 15 kilograms, have to engage even in this lengthy hearing, which Judge Leinweber did? I mean, I give him a lot of credit for doing it, but was that even necessary?
It was necessary. I was not the attorney originally assigned to the case. I was appointed to the case after the remand for the Seventh Circuit. When I got the case, it was clear to me what the Seventh Circuit said is this goes back for a brand new sentencing hearing, not a Palladino remand or anything. Judge Leinweber asked that question, and I stated, I believe he's entitled to a brand new hearing to raise any arguments, and the government conceded that that was the case, that to the extent we wanted to challenge anything with respect to the sentencing, we were free to do so. This was a brand new sentencing. We demanded that the government prove its drug quantity charges, its allegations, and that they bring in Annette Addison. They did, and this is what proceeded. I see, I'm in my rebuttal time. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Plotkin. We'll hear now from Ms. Littleton.
Good morning. May it please the court. Let me start with the defendant's first argument about reasonable foreseeability. The defendant's argument that the district court failed to conclude that the cocaine smuggled into the United States by Ms. Addison and Ms. Butler was reasonably foreseeable to him and therefore that he cannot be held accountable to it is belied by the record in this case. Before considering whether to attribute this amount of cocaine to Mr. Hollins, the district court specifically stated that what was at issue was whether or not that drug quantity was foreseeable to Mr. Hollins. The court then went on to basically consider this issue and ultimately concluded that he was responsible for that drug amount, therefore concluding that it was reasonably foreseeable to him. So I think the defendant would like this court to conclude that a judge is required to state at the same time or simultaneously with the determination that a drug quantity should be attributed to a defendant that it's reasonably foreseeable to him, even if that statement has already been made and it is clear from the record that that consideration was made. In this case, it is clear from the record that Judge Lalline and Weber specifically considered whether or not this drug amount was reasonably foreseeable to the defendant, and for that reason, it was certainly not clear error. Moreover, the evidence that this drug amount was foreseeable to Mr. Hollins was supported, the evidence supported that conclusion. The defendant would like for this court to sort of look at Ms. Addison's testimony in a vacuum as if that was all that Judge Lyon and Weber had to consider. That's just simply not the case. And as the court recognized, certainly from reading the record and as both myself and defense counsel pointed out in our briefs, Ms. Addison's testimony at the resentencing was difficult, to say the least. It was difficult for both parties. She had a memory lapse when it came to some things, and then at other times she changed her story. And so what the judge was required to do was to determine, he was required to resolve those conflicts in the testimony and to make credibility determinations. And that is exactly what he did here. In fact, if you in reviewing the record, and as pointed out in the government's brief, Judge Leinenweber conducted his own inquiry of Ms. Addison to try to make his own determination as to whether or not Ms. Addison had testified truthfully in co-defendant Wilson's sentencing, as well as if she had provided truthful information to the government in her proffer interview. Her testimony in co-defendant Wilson's sentencing hearing was consistent with that proffer interview. So he had to decide whether or not these conflicts in her testimony at the resentencing of Mr. Hollins, what that really meant. And what he did is he first concluded that she had been truthful in Wilson's hearing and in her proffer interview, and he determined that the statements that she had made that were consistent with that in the resentencing should be credited, and that's exactly what he did. And it is up to him, it's up to the trier of fact to make those determinations. But that's not all that the judge had to rely on. Not only did the judge have Ms. Addison's testimony and her proffer interview, but he also had the testimony at trial. At trial, the court heard from Mr. Stewart, heard from Mr. Clemens, both of whom said that they couriered cocaine for Mr. Hollins. The court also had the report of Ms. Norwood's interview that she couriered the cocaine for Mr. Hollins and Mr. Wilson. There was substantial evidence before the court in totality, taking the trial testimony as well as what happened at the sentencing of the co-defendant as well as at the resentencing, that Mr. Hollins and Mr. Wilson were responsible for running this thing, and that the cocaine that Ms. Addison and Ms. Butler brought into the United States should have been attributed to him and was reasonably foreseeable to him. Secondly, the defendant contends that there is just the main argument is that Ms. Addison was simply not a reliable witness, and for those reasons, for the reasons that the government has already stated, Ms. Addison could be credited at least with regard to the statements that the district court relied on in attributing that drug amount to her. I'm happy to address the other arguments in the brief if the court would like.
I don't think that's necessary. Thank you, Ms.
Thank
Littleton.
You.
How much time does Mr. Plotkin have? Thank you.
The only testimony regarding the Addison 2 trip is Annette Addison herself. Trial testimony says nothing about the Annette Addison trip because she was not part of the trial. They specifically held her out of the trial. When they talk about making credibility determinations and what Judge Leinenweber must have been thinking, she's reading minds. If you read the transcript, none of the credibility determinations just cited by the government will be on paper. He never said, I find her credible as to X, Y, and Z. What I just want to say in closing, in the Clemens trip, the evidence is even weaker. There's actually no evidence that he brought cocaine into the United States. And what's going on here is this is the epitome of the tail wagging the dog. The government brought evidence of a very limited conspiracy at trial and got convictions on 765 grams of cocaine. That's it. Now they come into sentencing and talk about 12 kilos of cocaine, and they ask the judge, after presenting Annette Addison, who is not only difficult but incredible, based on her testimony, double his sentence, more than double his sentence, go from 765 grams to 12 kilos, even though we didn't bring this up at trial. That is the tail wagging the dog. It's made worse by the fact that the testimony that they kept out of trial is Annette Addison, and there's an obvious reason they did that, because no jury would believe her beyond a reasonable doubt. This is an end run around the Sixth Amendment, and it is a violation of Blakely and Booker, as well as a violation of due process to be sentenced on reliable information. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Plotkin. Our thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement.